Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, the fourth of 10 children. After earning a BS in International Studies from Michigan State University, he worked with troubled youth for 2 years. He, his dad, and his brother Gene formed an insurance agency in 1986, and he worked there for 23 years. A world-class salesman, he's a modern-day Renaissance man who has a most unique philosophy of life. His name? John Lovasco Jr. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible. And tonight, we're talking to John Lovasco Jr., a great friend and somebody that I've really admired for many years. John, welcome. An honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It is quite an honor to have been asked, and it's a beautiful time of year to be sitting across from you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, like you said, I grew up in a family with 9 brothers and sisters. A mom and a dad that loved each other and still do, and had a big extended family. So it wasn't just the 9 brothers and sisters and my mom and dad. There were 7 great aunts from one side of the family, and then there was my mom's side of the family with sisters, brothers, and 45 to 50 first cousins. So when I think of my growing up, it wasn't just the Lovasco household. It was a tremendous amount of respect that my mom and dad had for their parents. And my father, his mother, his father had deceased at a young age. And then my mom, her mother, her father had passed. So seeing the way they treated their mom and dad kind of was a clue for us about how we treat our mom and dad. But growing up in a family like that, things were simple. Things, we didn't have a lot. We had 7 children and my mom and dad living in one home that just had one bathroom, which I think would be a common story for, you know, the early 60s. It was a great time, though. We laughed a lot. We sang a lot, whether we would go to church and sing the songs that we had just heard when we were singing there, or The Sound of Music came out, and Mary Poppins and the Beatles. And as those songs came out, we would sing them as a family.
Did you ever sing Johnny Angel?
No.
No? Oh, that's a great song.
No.
You know, your dad's bigger than life. Your mom, she is quiet elegance. What's the biggest thing you learned from your mom?
My mom is a phenomenal listener, which is probably where I became so confident in speaking. She'd listen to me for hours. My mom had a remarkable ability to laugh when there seemed to be stress, and her laughter wasn't nervousness. It was because she found humor in things, whether it was my father or all of us. I would say my mom is probably the finest delegator I've ever seen. She would find ways to inspire us to do things when we really didn't want to. She's also a person who found each of our individual talents and would nurture each one of ours. With each of my brothers and sisters, each one's more talented than the next. My mom somehow found the time to allow each one to do what they did best, and it's a remarkable gift.
Your dad, bigger than life. What's the biggest thing he taught you?
Oh. Every Sunday at church, he would put a dollar bill in my hand when I was a little boy and make sure I put that money in the offering. So he taught me, make sure you give all the time. He treated my mom with tremendous respect. So he gave me an example of how to treat a woman. I hope I did that well, and I've done that well for my wife. He taught me to work really hard. He goes every day on the phone, We call it dialing for dollars, but he is a ferociously disciplined person. And I admire him because he walks and stays healthy. And his faith. So,
you earn a B.S. in International Studies from Michigan State University, John Lovasco. And then for 2 years, you work with troubled youth in a program that was a 30-day outdoor expedition. Talk to us about that experience.
Well, you know, out of college, I wasn't sure exactly what an international studies degree would give me. And so I tried insurance for a little bit, and I left. And I was always passionate in the outdoors, backpacking, hiking, climbing, canoeing. And I found a program in Pennsylvania called Tressler Lutheran Services, which took youth at risk. They were wards of the court of Pennsylvania. And I would take them out on 30-day backpacking, hiking, rock climbing, and whitewater canoeing courses. The idea was is that without everyone on the team, and there were 14 children in each group, me and one other adult, and then a logistics coordinator, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And unless children are given the opportunity to break in a safe environment and then to restore confidence not only within themselves but within a group, they couldn't get back acclimated into the community. And so that experience taught me perseverance, patience, hard work, and really the love of the potentiality of children and humans.
What did those troubled youth teach you, John Lovasco?
They taught me how well I had things. I never knew that you could have such very difficult, sad experiences as children because I grew up in a very healthy, happy home environment. But dealing with the traumas of abuse, of addictions, of self-doubt, I learned that you have to get down to their, you have to be real. And by being real, you could actually serve them better.
We're talking to John Lovasco. When we come back, we'll ask him about starting an insurance agency in 1986. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with John Lovasco Jr., who in 1986, along with his dad and his brother Gene, formed an insurance agency named Allied Insurance, later changed to Elcos. What's it like building a family business with a brother and a very strong dad?
Well, let me first say that I had the pleasure of working for a true family business, Ahe Jewelers in Grosse Pointe. And I did that for 8 years, one of the finest experiences of my life. One of the things I took from it was, I don't know if I'm capable of having a family business. What I mean is that my dad, my brother, and I came together and worked together, but my dad made it real clear it's really not a family business because there was no salary. There was no comfort. You had to go out and what we call eat what you kill. So in a sense, we worked together, but we worked independently trying to become the best that we could. We'd go in every day. We'd have our meetings. My brother Gene, who is a really talented individual who I admire tremendously, his expertise was in one area, accounting and law and prospecting. My dad was a phenomenal insurance person and was very, very good at prospecting. And my area of expertise really became or evolved into team building and closing. So I focused in the area of employee benefits, where Gene focused in the area of estate planning, and my dad focused in the area of prospecting. We then partnered with some other people because what we soon found out was building a family business or building any kind of business, you're only as good as the people you're around. And I was very fortunate to stumble upon early in my career, Paul Vanderhoven, John Marshall, and Mike Kirchner, and eventually more partners. These were amazing men. Without them and their confidence in me, I don't know if we could have done it. But we ended up growing a small little agency with probably, I would say in 1986, revenues, not very much, maybe $200,000, which is a lot, but for three families to live off, not a lot. to a place where in 2007, I think it was, you know, in the $18 million range. So hard work, perseverance, game planning, and loving my brother and my dad, and not afraid to fight throughout it all.
You worked there for 23 years until 2009. Why did you leave?
There's a couple reasons. That's a very important question. In 2007 is the year we sold the agency, and we sold it to Brown & Brown. The reason I chose to sell the agency, or I wanted it, was I saw for the first time that a Democratic president, a Democratic House, and a Democratic Senate were all going to be merging in on a health care legislation, and I thought that that happened to be the thing that drove the amount of, greatest amount of margins in our industry. If we were ever going to sell, the time to do it is when the climate for healthcare revenues were going to be at their highest, and I assumed that that was the case. I did that till in 2007. I worked until 2009, leading the transition. I felt it was time. I had done what I wanted to. I did what I loved, and I'm in the process right now of pursuing other things that I'm passionate about.
John Lovesco, I've always admired you for years. You know, from the day that you and I, with Mike Kirshner, met the three of us, right? I don't know, 25 years ago. One of the many reasons I admire you is you're very grateful. And especially at this time of the year, Thanksgiving, you've told me many times how blessed we are. Talk to us about being grateful.
Well, Jack, I think when I'm grateful, it stirs in me an appreciation for others. It reminds me to not be thinking of me. We have so much to be grateful, the fact that we are just born on this planet, and then that we're born into this country, and then into this community. And it's a privilege. It's a privilege to be alive. That kind of thinking is all I ever knew. It's what I heard my grandparents say. It's what I heard my mom and dad say. And I think I have a responsibility, and I don't do it in an obligatory way, but I truly just feel grateful every day that I have an opportunity to live on this planet.
There's a book I read years ago, Man of Steel and Velvet. A lot of men have steel, but no velvet. A lot of guys have velvet, but no steel. You have both of them to a great degree. Where did you get that?
I would say the steel came from my father. He was tough, but man, he's the best man at my wedding. So, interesting. I think the steel also came from working for strong men and having strong sisters. The velvet came from my mother and from having six sisters. That required me to be thoughtful, kind, conscientious. But there's something else that resonates deeply with me, and that is just there's a religious underflow for me growing up in a strong Catholic family, and that is just words like, you know, do on to others, you know, being grateful, being kind, leave the world better than you find it. You can't do that being steel all the time. There needs to be a gentleness and a tenderness, especially if you care about your mom, about your sisters, about mothers in general, children in general. So you can't always run things in a strong way. Sometimes you have to find the tender side.
Another thing, John Lovesco, I admire about you is, and this is a positive, you have a childlike fascination about life. Most people lose that. They haven't when they're young, but then they lose it. How have you kept that?
A childlike fascination. Well, thank you, Jack, for saying that. I'm going to have to ponder it, but I would say that I think the first thing you have to do is not look at everything as being the truth. I think you have to figure out what the truth is for yourself. And that means you have to take a look at everything you've ever been taught, everything you've learned, and ask yourself, is it true for you? And then if you can answer that question, then everything becomes possible. Everything becomes an opportunity. If you're always trying to hold up what you learned in the past, whether it's academics or religion or politics, and adapt someone else's way of thinking, I think the world becomes heavy because you're not authentically yourself. I think when you are authentic and you've done the work of assessing what's your truth, you can look at world with a much bigger, optimistic mind, and you can laugh a lot more about it.
You love nature. You always have. What does nature teach us?
Nature teaches me to be still, to observe. If you just look out your window and say, I'm looking at nature, you might as well look at a photograph. If you sit in nature, you'll start seeing things come to you. You'll see a red fox. You'll see a red-tailed hawk. You'll see things gather near water that, if you're just looking at the water in the sunset, that's not enough. You have to sit long enough and it starts showing you things. It also is a place where I find peace. I get reinvigorated, and I also want to protect it. I feel we have an obligation as a culture, as a humanity, to leave things better than we found it. And the natural world for me is a constant reminder of our role as small individuals having an opportunity to make a huge difference in protecting the natural world for future generations.
You say that things gather around water. When we're on the golf course, our golf balls gather around water, in the water. So you and Donna have 40-acre spread in North Oakland County. Beautiful piece of property with a stream running through, etc. You do a lot of the manual work on those 40 acres. Now, you've got enough money to have somebody come in and do that work. But you love to do that work. Why?
Recently, we repaired a 55-year-old fence. And we had someone else build the fence. I needed a professional. But they said, we'll then have someone come out and spray it. Well, instead, my wife and I said, let's paint it ourselves. Little did I realize that was a three-week endeavor, 8 hours a day. But what ended up happening, as we painted the fence, neighbors would stop by. Neighbors would pull up and ask if we have an extra paintbrush. Neighbors would bake us a pie. We would introduce ourselves to others. And what ends up happening is when you give of yourself to something, whether it's painting a fence, cutting shrubs, cleaning trees that fall down, whatever is the work outside, you actually get more than you give. Not only for yourself, but for people around you. It shows I get a lot out of it. My neighbors get a lot out of it. My wife and family get out of it. And we appreciate the hard work that comes from it.
We're talking to John Lovasco, a modern-day Renaissance man. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with a most fascinating human being, John Lovasco Jr. John, you pray and exercise each day. Why?
I pray and exercise each day. Again, I had a great role model. So originally, I would say, is because I saw other people do it. Now that I've been doing it myself, and I've been doing it for a long time, I do it because it allows me, again, to go inside, to keep my saw sharpened so that when I go out into the real world, I feel healthy. When you say exercise, it's gentle stuff. I mean, I swim a couple days a week. I walk 5 miles 3 days a week. And then I try to do weights 1 or 2 days, but real easy weights, nothing real hardcore. As far as prayer, it's real quiet time. It's 5 minutes every morning by myself. And then it's 5 minutes, really 2 minutes every morning with my wife. I do that just to get myself centered.
If there's a listener that says, wow, I'd like to do that, but I don't have the time, John.
I would say you don't have the time not to. I think if you take 7 minutes a day to connect with what you consider to be your creator, you take a couple minutes every morning to have that creator and your wife in commune, and then you exercise 30 minutes a day. I think those are the best times of your day. Then everything else you're giving to, you have the energy. You have the clarity. You process food better. You sleep better. You think better. So you're giving yourself the gift. Exercise, prayer, and I think study too. You have to read and find things that you're interested in and improve on those things. And I think the combination of those, you do it because you benefit, but others benefit as well.
Your dad has gone to hundreds and hundreds of business owners, maybe 1,000 business owners, and has asked them to set up a little chapel in their corporate office that people can come, their employees can come and pray. That takes courage. He's also spent a lot of money on billboards about the Sacred Heart, etc. What do you think about that?
I think it's fantastic that a person gets inspired by their God experience. And in my dad's instance, he was born, raised Catholic. He needed something bigger than just his own humanity to survive and raise 10 kids, and he found it in God, and he found it in his relationship to the Catholic Church, and specifically, you know, Jesus and Jesus's mother Mary for my father. And he used that strength to motivate and inspire himself, kind of to be his moral compass. And without that moral compass, I don't think he would have been as effective as a father and as a husband. So I admire that aspect, but I also am grateful that we live in a country that if somebody wants to have the courage to move forth with their spiritual values, they can try it. Now, they're not always going to be embraced, as we've seen, whether you're, you know, Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist, whatever your spirituality is. I love the fact that we live in a country that allows you to practice that. So I embrace it, and I think I'm proud of my father for following himself.
You've been blessed with a great mom and a dad, and you've been blessed for 23 years with a great teammate, Donna. And you publicly state that the last year has been the best year of the marriage. Why?
Donna and I came from two very different backgrounds, and we did a very good job raising our two children, Tressa and Luke. I think they would tell you we did a good job. We love them dearly. But, you know, I think over time you think you know what you're doing. You think you know what's best for your spouse. You think you know what's best for yourself. You get focused on your career. You look at your property. You look at everything on the outside, and everything looks great. And you even do your own self-analysis of yourself. Sometimes your ego gets in the way and you stop thinking what you should be doing on behalf of your spouse. And I stopped thinking of my marriage as a vocation rather than just something that I was entitled to have. I'd been there 23 years. It's good. We can keep going. And we ran into a situation and I would consider it a crisis of clarity. And we decided to go to counseling, and in doing that, we found someone who said, what is your highest governing value for the two of you? And both of us said we had been missing an idea of inviting spirituality or God into the relationship. So we then made the commitment 350 days ago to pray every morning together. And it's nothing complicated. We sit down, we have our little cup of coffee. We talk like we have our entire marriage for at least 20 minutes every morning. But instead of just having 20 minutes come and go, we hold hands and ask God to give us wisdom and to bless our marriage. And we're finding in doing that, it's better for us. It's the best year of my, it's the best year of my marriage with my wife, Donna. I think she'd say the same.
If there's a couple that says, wow, tonight, and they say, how do you pray together? What do you tell them?
Well, first I would say I have my own ideas and Donna has her own ideas. Sometimes it's very serious and we'll use a traditional prayer. I was raised Catholic. She was raised Lutheran. So we don't share the exact same prayers, but sometimes it's an ad lib prayer where we just say whatever's on our mind. Sometimes we laugh the entire time because none of us are taking it serious. Sometimes it's very serious. It changes as each day changes. So I would say each of you have to be comfortable in your own skin to express yourself to the God that you relate to. And I would say try it and then kind of see how it goes. I don't think there's one answer to that question.
Let's go on to your children. A week ago, the two of us were with Coach Rick Forzano, former coach of the Lions, Naval Academy. He recruited Roger Staubach to go there. Staubach wins the Heisman Trophy. And we were talking about the Lions playing, and he's giving insights that they weren't doing good because they had no running game at the time. They didn't have that Kevin Smith yet. And you can't win football games if you can't run, blah, blah, blah. And he's giving you insights. And you made the statement, Coach, I just wish you could come to the house one Sunday and watch football with Luke and I because I tell him this stuff and he don't want to listen. He don't listen to nothing I say because he plays football. And then this Rick Forzano says, well, let me tell you, when Rick Jr., years ago, he was a quarterback at Andover High School. You know, I used to go on the yard and try to teach him pointers and this, and he wouldn't want to listen. And I'd go in the house and talk to his mom and say, you know, Betts, am I not the head coach of the Lions here? Your kid don't even want to listen to me. And then Roger Staubach came to town and stayed with him for 4 days, and every day he worked with Rick Jr. And Rick would come in and say, oh, let me tell you what Roger said today, the very same things. So the point is, teenagers don't want to listen to the mom and the dad. How do you get Luke and Tressa to listen to the two of you?
We don't. I mean, the answer really is, if anyone knew that answer, they would be, it's smoke. I would say that the kid, Tressa and Luke need to go off on their own. They need to grow. They need to experience life. They need to see how good they have it so that when they do eventually see what I have to say as being wise, or hopefully it is, they make that choice on their own. I don't think a parent can make a child agree with them. I think a parent can model, try to act out of their own integrity, allow their children the freedom to kind of go off onto their own. My daughter has gone away. She's been in Chicago and at a university. Now she's at an in-state university. I think the more time she returns, the wiser I seem. My son is at a local community college, getting ready to go to Michigan State next year. And I hope by his second year graduation, I'm going to become a wiser guy.
Well, it will happen. It will happen.
I believe.
We're talking to John Lovasco, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to John Lovasco Jr., who has a most unique philosophy of life. I'd like to share it with you. It starts with to leave, with three dots. My family, my friends, my religion, my politics, my business, my dreams, our world, better than I found them, which is terrific. But then, John, the last sentence, you add, and do it so no one knows it was you. Why that last sentence?
Well, Jack, I don't know that answer. I wish I could say because I read it in a book or I was told that you should be humble or you should caution yourself from being egoic. But I think there's something beautiful about anonymity when you're giving. But I'm learning in time that there's something that's beautiful about giving and people knowing who's doing it. Me personally, I like to tithe. And that's where you give away 10% of what you make. Some people say it should be before tax, some after tax, but bottom line is the act of tithing is really the act of concentrating on what you should be giving to. And I'm more focused on that act of giving than I am about the benefit that I personally receive. So I've just thought about anything I have done, doing it in a way that doesn't bring me into the focus, but brings the thing that I'm giving to as the focus.
To leave my family, my friends, my religion, my politics, my business, my dreams, our world, better than I found them, and do it so no one knows it was you. And John, you live that every day, and I commend you for it. The holidays, John Lovasco, can be the happiest of times or the loneliness of times. So a lot of people at this time of the year are very happy, but then others have lost a loved one, lost a job, marriage breakup, problems with children, very lonely time in their life. What would you say to those listeners?
I would say to everybody that we have a unique opportunity to live on this planet, regardless if we're 100% healthy or we're not. We are breathing and living, and everything we do has an impact on a future generation, whether it's a child down the street, whether it's a brother and sister. I think the first thing I would say is don't look at yourself as someone who should have pity on. Rather, look at who you can serve and forgive yourself and forgive everybody else who's ever wronged you, because that ends up something that you hold on to. If you can just forgive and let go of your past, anyone who's wronged you, and then think about giving into the future, you're going to be free. And if you're free, you can make the world better. And regardless of anyone's state, economically, relationship-wise, I think you got to come to truth within yourself and then start giving.
Recently, you and Donna spent 4 hours at the Grace Centers for Hope. That's the old Pontiac Rescue Mission. Tell us about that experience.
Well, first, Donna and I are... Every year we sit down and talk about what we would want to tithe to. What would we want to give our money, our time, our talent, or our treasure to? And we were informed about a place called Grace Centers for Hope in Pontiac, and I was scheduled a meeting. I called. I had never met Pastor Kent Clark and his daughter Shannon, and we went there because we... Sometimes you just write a check to a place in India, or you write a check to a place and to feed the homeless, which we've done over the years. But we wanted to experience firsthand a group of people that weren't just collecting money, but generating business ideas that allow the people who are going through difficult times, whether it's homelessness or drug addictions or sexual or physical abuse, that they have an opportunity to come back into the community as both workers as well as homeowners, that could eventually bring tax base back to the community and a sense of community pride. So I was very much inspired by it. And my wife and I have decided this year to do a little something for their community. And I was very moved by the fact that they're not looking for government assistance, but they're looking for free market ideas to solve free market issues. Not to say that I don't see the need of government in certain instances, but I love to see a story where individuals take an initiative to come up with ideas that generate profit and wealth for the constituents and serve a social need at the same time.
One of the many things I've learned in doing this show, as the beneficiary of the show, is that we learn much more from the poor than we ever will from the rich. Why is that?
Well, Jack, boy, you're asking questions as though I have these answers, but I would say that we all have a lot of poor in us. I think we're closer. My dad always says, when you're on your knees, you don't have to fall down so far. And I think the same with the poor is people that are poor, whether it's emotional or physical or financial, they're very close to the rawness of life. And I think the closer we are to what's real, which is the rawness of life, even in the natural world, the more we can relate to truth. and survival. I think when you're wealthy, you lose touch with that. And that's the reason for constantly looking to give, so that you don't lose touch in the pulse of being as close to the natural world as possible.
You and I are blessed to participate in a small monthly men's prayer breakfast. Tell us what you get out of that breakfast.
Oh, first of all, I get out of it the privilege of being around men who are not afraid to be vulnerable, who do not necessarily agree with one another, that focus on faith in a unique way, and come each week to share their business issues, their marriage issues, their physical well-being issues. But the bottom line is they love each other and they're committed. And I respect it and I look forward to it.
Alonzo, who leads it?
Alonzo McDonald is a dictionary. He's a hard, hard worker. He's disciplined and he puts it out there. And I admire him.
He's 42 encyclopedias too. Amazing man, amazing.
He's
man.
Remarkable, as you are, Jack, as
no,
you are.
No way. As our time wanes down to another John Lobosco, can you lead us in a prayer of thanksgiving?
I would be honored, Jack. On this Thanksgiving, Heavenly Father, God, thank you for this day and this moment. Thank you for Jack Krasula. And thank you for allowing us to live in a country where our beliefs can be expressed freely and openly. Thank you for allowing me to live on a planet that provides for all of our needs. Help me to be a good steward. Thank you for our politics, education, science, and industry. Help me to be a good steward. Thank you for Michigan, Detroit, my hometown. Help me to be a good steward. Thank you for my wife and children and our extended families. Guide us and protect us and help us to know your will for us. Help us, God, to find joy in giving and the rejuvenation that comes from gratitude. Amen.
And Heavenly Father, thanks for 25 plus years of great friendship between the two of us.
I look for 25 more, Jack.
Okay. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.